Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The best time of year when it comes to sports talk. We had the sports equinox yesterday with every major sport in action. We have the World Series going on. We have absolute chaos in college football brewing right now with some of the most high-profile jobs now up for grabs. So we have Denton Day filling in for Jenks today. And over the next hour, we will get you caught up on everything that happened in Monday Night Football between the Commanders and the Chiefs. We'll do a little sprinkle of World Series talk. But in this segment, we will go to Baton Rouge and welcome in Hunt Palmer of the Hunt Palmer Show of 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge to talk everything Brian Kelly. And then there are so many layers to this story where it feels like only at LSU do you have the governor involved. You have all of these like other cultural things going involved to where I know people talk about like fit mattering. It especially matters. It feels like at LSU, and it just did not feel like Brian Kelly was a great fit.
And the best way to spell fit Chelsea at LSU is W-I-N. And that's unfortunately something that Brian Kelly did not do a lot of. And that's really what led to this. You can't lose the way that he lost, and you can't have your stadium quieted in a night game at Baton Rouge. It's not allowed there. That is a tough place to play, and they got dog-walked by Texas A&M. It was a tough watch.
Yeah, especially a game you were leading at halftime. That's the worst part. So let's bring in Hunt Palmer now, because we have a lot to talk about and there's many chapters to this story. So here he is now. He is Hunt Palmer, host of the Hunt Palmer Show of 104.5 ESPN in Baton Rouge. So Hunt, let me ask you, what do you think is the wildest detail of this entire saga of Brian Kelly being fired?
The wildest detail. I'll say this. I've been in Tiger Stadium a lot in my life. I have never seen a scene quite like I saw on Saturday night, where LSU's fan base left in the late third quarter. It was empty. The entire stadium was filled with Texas A&M fans doing their chants and whoops and hand motions and whatever it is that they do. They played Colin Baton Rouge. It was silent in there. I've seen LSU lose to UAB. I've seen them lose to Troy. I've seen Nick Saban shut them out. I've seen Nick Saban break their hearts. I've never seen what I saw on Saturday, and I think that got some people's attention in a big way, and all of a sudden there was a change less than 20 hours later.
When did you know that Brian Kelly was not going to reach the heights that his predecessors, Ogeron, Miles, and Saban did?
It felt like the loss at Vanderbilt 2 weeks ago that essentially sealed this team's fate was important, because you realize that right out of the chute, he was dealt a pretty tough hand. LSU was down to 30-some-odd scholarship players, and you would have very high expectations in year one, and he won the SEC West. And so the next year you came back and you had Jaden Daniels, who won the Heisman Trophy that year, and you had Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers, and you had a high-flying offense, but you fielded the worst defense in the history of the school. So they had to go back and try to fix that whole thing. Well, then Jaden Daniels is gone, and Malik Nabers is gone, and Brian Thomas is gone, and they've never recreated that offensive balance. But you felt like you had a pretty good core coming back this year, so they went in the transfer portal and spent a ton of money. and thought, okay, well, we've got the roster now. You've got the coaching staff in place now. Like, this is the team that needs to go achieve. And you lost at Ole Miss, and you lost to Vanderbilt, and you got annihilated by Texas A&M. There's really not a lot to suggest you're going to Tuscaloosa and winning. You might not beat Arkansas, who scores a ton of points. And when all of a sudden you're looking at 7-5, 6-6 for the team that had everything lined up, and at that point you realize that it's toast. And because they lost that game to Vanderbilt in the way that they had played offensively, you just didn't feel like they were going to fix it. And at that point, when you've got all the resources pointed to 1 year, and that 1 year is a failure, it starts to become pretty obvious.
Right. And we kind of talked about this at the top of the segment, how, like, a lot of people are talking about the fit and how, like, even from the jump when Brian Kelly was doing that, like, weird accent, it just felt like it never really matched. But at the end of the day, if he would have won games, I don't think people would have cared. Was there ever a moment or ever, like, a week where people actually liked Brian Kelly? Like, I'm looking at the fan base now and it feels like he is not very liked, even with some of these tweets coming out with former players. Did people ever really like him?
They liked him when he beat Nick Saban the first year. that was a big deal. LSU had not beaten Alabama in Tiger Stadium since 2010, and he did it in 2022. It had been 12 years. But, I mean, I have pushed back against some of the national stuff with Fitz and the accent thing. I talk into a microphone for 10 hours every week, and I slur words all the time. I'm comfortable suggesting that it's reasonable that Brian Kelly probably didn't think he was going to trick 10,000 LSU fans into the fact that he had a Southern accent. I don't know that that's what he thought. That, to me, was a little bit overblown. It's funny to people, and I get it, it's a Twitter clip, whatever. But the deal is that, like, Dale Brown is the winningest basketball coach ever at LSU. He went to two Final Fours, coached Shaq. He came from Washington State, and he's a native of North Dakota. Skip Bertman is a legend in this town. He is a Jewish man that never left South Florida, coming right into South Louisiana, which is the heart of Catholic country. Nick Saban was a career Midwesterner who fit in great here. Jay Johnson is a celebrity here, coaching LSU's baseball team. He's won two national championships. He never left the West Coast his entire life. Like, there's no better fit than Ed Ogeron. He got fired 5 minutes after he won a national championship. They hired Johnny Jones, who played and coached here for basketball. It was a complete disaster. Like, fit is winning games. I don't care where you're from, mm-hmm. what you sound like, what your history is. And Brian Kelly he won some, but 8 or 9 is not going to get it in this era. And certainly Saturday night was the end of the line.
So they let him go on Sunday. You kind of get to, I guess, as a fan base, bask in the glory of, hey, the guy that we don't like is now gone. But now you have to hire somebody that can be better than him, Hunt. As you look around the landscape, who are some of the options that you think LSU is going to seriously inquire about bringing in?
It's early, and quite honestly, as y'all mentioned at the top of the segment here, like, there are some things that have to happen before LSU hires a football coach. One, they've got to get a university president in place. That's going to happen in the next 2.5 weeks. They're going to present a top five here shortly, and I think that'll be approved sometime in mid-November. At that point, determination's got to be made about Scott Woodward's future as the athletic director. And, you know, it's possible that you get one swing at a football coach. It didn't work. The buyout's massive, and the powers that be say that was your only chance, and they move in a different direction there. Maybe not, but maybe so. That decision's yet to be made, I think. And then you got to determine who's making this hire. And then you got to make the hire. So, like, that makes things difficult down here for sure. But as far as names to look at, like, everybody's going to talk about Lane Kiffin. I've got a column that's going to post up at our site, LouisianaSports.net, here in an hour that suggests the timing might be slippery on that, because I think they're going 11-1. They're going 11-1. They're either going to play a home game on December the 19th. By until New Year's Day. Do you think LSU is going to wait until New Year's Day, or do you think Lane Kiffin's going to walk away from a playoff team before they take the field? Like, that's iffy. And you talk about the national signing days in December. The transfer portal opens January 2nd. It's just like that's a lot of waiting to do. I think that there's reason to believe that John Summerall from Tulane could get a phone call. I personally would call Clark Lee at Vanderbilt because I think he's just so polished and such a people person and motivator. He's at his alma mater. What does that mean? So I think there are a lot of names to consider. I don't think there's a cookie cutter mold that you've got to have. And I'm curious to see, one, how the next 3 weeks plays out with LSU's powers that be, and then two, what starts to happen, I think, probably in early December. It's a wild time. We went through a lot of years down here with no coaching searches. Les Miles was here for a long time. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to be on your third one in pretty short order.
And it's wild to me the amount of high-profile jobs that are now available with Penn State, with Florida, and, of course, with LSU. Do you think LSU is the best job available for, you know, incoming coaches when it...
I do think LSU is the best of those jobs. The job market, though, is completely different than it was 15 years ago. Like, you're looking at a time right now where three of the teams with the best chance to make the playoffs and maybe make even a run are Indiana, Vanderbilt, and Georgia Tech. Like, that just was not the case if you look at this thing 15, 10 years ago. So, yeah, I think that LSU is a phenomenal job. I think it comes with a lot of expectations. And I think there are probably some coaches that feel like when it would have been a no-brainer to leave Vanderbilt or Indiana or Georgia Tech for LSU 10 years ago. Is it that now? If you feel like you can do everything you need to do in this landscape at those places. But yeah, I mean, LSU's got an amazing tradition, an incredible fan base and facilities. It's in a prestigious conference with a lot of money. And the proof is that, you know, three of the last four coaches have won national championships at LSU. So it can certainly be done. You can do it at Florida and Penn State as well. But I think LSU's is attractive, but there are drawbacks like the administration and the fact that if you don't win 10 or 11 games in most years, you'll be fine.
So, Hunt, if we look back to Saturday, you know, the Beige Cult is doing their dance. They're taking over the stadium. Was Saturday more about LSU being bad, or is it time to admit, both you and I, that Texas A&M is actually really good?
A&M's good. What I think about this A&M team, and look, this is a team that was on the ropes against Arkansas 2 weeks ago. It's a team that was on the ropes against a bad Auburn team as well. The team that was one holding call away from losing Notre Dame too. So the thing about Texas A&M, and really everybody in college football, the Saban firewall is not there anymore. The Kirby Smart, steamroller freight train from 4 or 5 years ago is not there anymore. Ryan Day's Ohio State team is very good, and maybe they're in that class, but maybe they're not. There was a run of 15 years where if you weren't, without any holes, you weren't going to go beat Nick Saban. It took Cam Newton or Joe Burrow or Johnny Manziel. I mean, that's who, or Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson, to beat him. And now it just feels like there are a lot more teams that have a shot to get this done. And that's what I think helps a team like Indiana, helps a team like playing Texas A&M that maybe wasn't going to stand toe-to-toe with Nick Saban's team in 2012 or in 2020, but they can certainly stand toe-to-toe with anybody now.
All right, so before we let you go quickly, you had mentioned you were writing an article that's coming out in about an hour. Where can the listeners find this?
LouisianaSports.net. It's completely free. It's a site that we launched from our radio group back a year ago that we cover the Saints, cover LSU, cover SEC football, and we actually had the story on Brian Kelly being fired first. And I'll write a column that comes up about the timing issues and really the changing landscape of college football and why that Lane Kiffin, who probably would have crawled to Baton Rouge in 2021 last time this job was open but didn't get a phone call, may not be – the timing may not work for LSU and Lane Kiffin to work. So we'll see.
Crazy times in college football, and he covers it all in Baton Rouge. He is Hunt Palmer, host of the Hunt Palmer Show. Thank you for your time. We know you are extremely busy with this coaching search.
I appreciate you all for having me. Have a great day. Thanks.
All right. I don't know if that site has a message board, but if you want to be entertained, go to those like college websites and look at the message boards. Holy crap. That is some entertainment.
I mean, one of the best follows on Twitter is the college football Reddit page, where they just scour all of these teams' Reddits, and you see the craziest, most inane things that are being said. It's just like a weekly thing. It's a Tuesday in there. It's the craziest thing. So I know in Baton Rouge they're feeling it. Also, I'm kicking myself, Chelsea, that I didn't ask him about this. Did you see the videos of Brian Kelly, you know, leaving the facility? Yes. I didn't know that there were paparazzi in Baton Rouge, because it sure looked like the person that was taking that video was like hiding in a bush. This feels like new territory for the state of Louisiana.
I don't think it is, though, because, like, football is a religion down there. Like, you heard the thing about the governor. Like, everybody is involved. This is the biggest single issue in the state. It just means more in the SEC when it comes to these coaching searches. So it's really not surprising at all to me. Like, I covered football in the state of Alabama. Those people are crazy.
Crazy. They were going to win the lottery and buy out Kalen DeBoer. You're not going to do that now, are you?
Right?
No.
And that's why you shouldn't have the fans in charge of who coaches your team. Maybe a little flighty, but they are passionate. And that's why it does mean more in the SEC. All right, coming up next, the biggest betting lessons we learned from Monday Night Football. Are the Chiefs going to win the Super Bowl again this year? All right, we'll talk about that next here on the Daily Tip, presented by BetMGM.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thanks for starting your morning the best way with us here on the Daily Tip, presented by BetMGM. I'm Chelsea Messenger, Denton Day in for Jenks today. And we're coming off the sports equinox, which for me meant two games. I was watching Monday Night Football between the Chiefs and the Commanders, and also the World Series. But I feel like we have different power rankings because, Den, you are a big Commanders fan. You do some work for the team. So I know you were super dialed in to this Commanders game last night. But let's get a vibe check for, like, the fans in D.C. How are we feeling about this year's team? Is it just general, like, disappointment saying, okay, we've had a ton of injuries. It's just not our year. We still have plenty of years left in the tank, hopefully for Jayden Daniels. Or is it more along the lines of, like, oh no, what if we never get back to the NFC Championship game? Which feels a little desperate and a little negative. But I feel like people just assume that, like, if you have one good year, they're like, oh, we'll be back next year, right? It's not always the case in the NFL.
I pray that at some point in my life, one bad season will just be general disappointment. Because if you were to check social media right now, Chelsea, the sky is not falling. The sky is falling. Like, it's PTSD. Last year was a fluke. Pie in the sky. We are destined to be awful for forever. It's a cursed franchise. This, that, and everything else. The season is over. Pack it up. Mop it up. It's done. It's a lot of that going on social media right now. I put videos out after the game. If you look at the comments, it's a lot of that. It's the season's over. Trade everybody. Get these pieces out of here. Maybe Adam Peters is not a real general manager. Maybe Dan Quinn isn't that good of a head coach. No one's saying anything bad about Jayden Daniels. That'd be silly. But it's a lot of you might call it immature. It might be overreactionary, emotional. It's definitely emotional. It's a lot of that going on right now. Which, you know, with the injuries that they have, it makes sense. But I would also, you know, I'm trying to caution people and correctly point out, you lost to the Chiefs. They're really good. You're not a championship team right now. That's a championship team. That dude who wears number 15 on his chest, he's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's the other thing I want to ask, because sometimes you can buy low with a bunch of injuries, and you say, okay, eventually the injuries will correct themselves, and eventually we should see Jayden Daniels back on the field. And listen, you just have to sneak into the playoffs. I feel like if you're a team that can be dangerous with a quarterback that shows flashes like Jaden Daniels does. So is there any hope to bet on the Commanders down the stretch? Or do you just say, hey, this is a lost season. There are other problems than just the injuries.
I would be, I'd be much more willing to say yes to that question if we knew when Jaden was going to play again. Because right now he's out with a hamstring injury. In the history of the NFL, I'm not saying it's never been done, but in the history of the NFL, when you see hamstring injury, it's very rarely a one-week injury. And particularly for a player that utilizes his athleticism and mobility to the degree that he does, there are some understandable question marks as to whether or not we're going to see, or when, I should say, we're going to see him again this year. They play on Sunday night coming up this week against Seattle. That one's going to be at home. I know he wants to play in that one. He wanted to play when he was out with a knee injury. They put him in front of the media one of those days when he was out with a knee injury. And I'm like, don't do that again. He was grumpy and he was saying, hey, he didn't say an argument, but he alluded to the fact that there was some arguing with him and the coaching staff as to whether or not he was going to play one of the weeks. So I just don't know when he's going to be back. And that therein lies all of the hope. If Jaden Daniels is playing, you can bet on the Commanders because the season was always going to be wherever it was going to go as far as Jaden Daniels took it, which is what happened last year as well. He is a difference maker, but if he's not going to play for a number of weeks, you're wasting your money because if they lose to Seattle this weekend, that's their sixth loss. And then you put a lot of pressure on them. In a good NFC, you're going to minimum have to have 10 wins. Potentially, it could be like last year where you needed 11, and you really trust a team that has not looked that good and can't really stop anybody to run the table. I, who cover them on a regular basis and am way too emotionally invested in them, I do not.
Long sigh. It's tough when you come to that realization about your own team, but sometimes you have to be realistic. So on to the winners of last night's game. So it was the Chiefs beating the Commanders 28-7. Patrick Mahomes goes 25 of 34 for 299 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. That's I know at least one of those was not really his fault, but it was a huge game for Travis Kelce. 6 catches, 99 yards, and this touchdown.
2nd and 6. Mahomes, end zone, caught by Kelce. Touchdown.
All right, so I'm not going to summarize the entire game because I know a lot of you guys watched it, but I think my biggest question moving forward is, do the Chiefs deserve to be Super Bowl favorites now that the offense looks like it is up to speed? I understand it's back-to-back games against lesser opponents. You know, beating the brakes off the Raiders does not guarantee that you're going to win a Super Bowl. But still, there is a reserved credit for the Chiefs, a team that has the pedigree and has the postseason experience. And it does feel like the defense is really, really solid, as we saw in the second half. So, Denton, do you think the Chiefs deserve to be Super Bowl favorites?
Yes. You know, it's not the fact that they beat the Raiders and they beat the Commanders. You know, last night was the worst start that Patrick Mahomes has had to a game in his career. He's never thrown 2 interceptions on the first 2 drives of his career until last night. And they still won by 21. It didn't matter. Mm. When this offense is rolling, they're in a position where they just name the score. They stopped trying last week against the Raiders. They effectively stopped trying yesterday against the Commanders. Which, you know what? I actually have a bone to pick real quick, Chelsea, if you will allow me. You know what's worse than watching your team get crushed on Monday Night Football? Watching your team get crushed on Monday Night Football, where you have bets on the other team, and then they don't hit those bets. I had the Chiefs over 30.5, and they just scored 28 because they stopped trying in the final 8 minutes. I had Xavier Worthy over 50 yards, and I think he had like 42 or something like that, because they just stopped giving, they just didn't give him the ball. And I'm screaming in a ball, because like once the game's over, I'm like, just give me my bets. Just get me my bets. So that hurt my feelings a little bit. But it's the way that they're playing. It's a confidence level that they have. They look so much more like the 2023 Chiefs than they did the 2024 Chiefs, where they're just, you know, they're getting by the skin of their teeth, the hair on their chin, getting, you know, close game. They're not playing close games anymore, man. Like, they're just blowing teams out. Rashee Rice is really good. Xavier Worthy's a threat. And Travis Kelce, over the past 2 weeks, particularly last night, he's turning the clock back a little bit. And that's a dangerous, dangerous thing as you get deeper into the season when he seemingly is getting younger and younger by the week.
Right, and I feel like I need to remind people that even the 2024 Chiefs went to the Super Bowl. I understand they lost in the Super Bowl, but still, even a team that looked very mediocre during the regular season, they still made it to the biggest game of the season. So it's scary what the potential could be for Kansas City. All right, so speaking of juggernauts, the Dodgers look to fit the bill in Major League Baseball. Last night, it took 18 innings, but the Dodgers reigned victorious over the Blue Jays in Game 3. It took 6 hours and 39 minutes, tied for the longest game in World Series history. But it was Freddie Freeman with the walk-off home run in this one. He is now, I think, has the most walk-off home runs in Major League Baseball history with 2. So, Den, how did the Blue Jays recover from a loss like this, where you go 18 innings, you use all these pitchers, only to have your heart ripped up by Freddie Freeman?
You get a good breakfast. You get maybe a couple of liquid IVs, like the drink, not the actual needle, unless they want the needle. I mean, I guess their pro team has access to the needle. I do not, so I get the drink powder. And then you get right back on. I mean, I do think you know, it sucks the way that you lost, but it does have to be a little beneficial to the mentality of it was just one game. And I know it, like you're fighting for your life, you're fighting to win a championship, but it's just one game. And the Dodgers put in a lot of effort. Like, they're tired, too. So you got to come out there. You have the benefit of being the younger of the two teams. You got a lot of guys that maybe don't need as much sleep as some of those old geezers over there in Los Angeles. You just got to get back out there. Sometimes it does pay to be young and dumb. And I think that that could be a real big benefit for Toronto, where maybe they approach the game tonight like, we don't even know if we're supposed to be tired right now. We're just going to go out here. We're going to try and win a baseball game.
Right, and I think the tight turnaround actually helps that, because you don't have time to sit around and pout. You got to get ready for the next game. And here's the thing, like, it feels like we have been hammering this as the narrative is that nobody can touch the big bad Dodgers and their payroll of $321 million. But this has been a really tight series, with the exception of when Yamamoto was pitching, who has just been untouchable. But then you look at the starters for this game, you're like, oh, Ohtani's pitching for the Dodgers. Good luck with that, friends over at the Blue Jays. But the Blue Jays have not been intimidated by the Dodgers. And if there's a lineup that can keep pace with the Dodgers Hall of Famers or future Hall of Famers in their lineup, it is the Blue Jays, averaging more than 6 runs a game. So I'm not sure if the Blue Jays can scratch across a lot of runs in the first few innings against Ohtani, but at some point the bullpen will have to come in. And the bullpen for both sides has been worn especially thin. So I'm not saying that the Blue Jays don't stand a chance, but the odds makers kind of are. So the Dodgers minus 200 in this game on the money line. If you like the Blue Jays, plus 165, total of 8 runs. And I think for me, I would still lean probably towards the over with both of these lineups. But then the first thought that I had was a pitcher outs prop, because even in the regular season, when you have a game go to extra innings and you have to use a bunch of pitchers, usually the manager the next day is like, okay, I need my starter to go a little bit longer to save our bullpen. So you look at Ohtani as outs recorded prop tonight, 17.5, but it's minus 167. And the problem is you cannot play alt lines on this. Right. I do think he probably gets to 6 innings, though, especially since there's not a whole lot of familiarity with the Blue Jays and Ohtani. Ohtani did not pitch against the Blue Jays this year, so I think he should be set up for some success. And also, George Springer might be out for this game. He got injured in the 7th inning last night for the Blue Jays, and he's the leadoff guy. He is the most clutch guy in their lineup, somebody who is a former World Series MVP against the Dodgers. So I don't know how that's going to work out. But I will say this, the heart and soul of the Blue Jays is still there, and his name is Vladdy Jr. He's hitting over .415 for the postseason, so I am not going to sit here and say that the Blue Jays do not stand a chance. We've seen this all series. It's been really evenly matched, so maybe you could look at the Blue Jays on the reverse run line, where they're getting a run and a half at minus 125. You could look at an over in this game if you think the Blue Jays can at least score some runs. But again, if anything involves fading Ohtani, I don't really love doing that.
Yeah, that's a tough position to be in as a gambler. Because, like, on the on the one hand, surely there's going to be some hiccup, right? Like this man, he's not perfect. There's going to be some. I mean, he played perfect yesterday, but like on one hand, I'm thinking like surely there's going to be one little flaw with him in this series. But on the other hand, haven't seen it. You know, I'm literally just grasping at straws to try and justify a bet that I want to make in favor of Toronto with no data, with nothing. I got four eyes. None of the four of these eyes have seen this man mess up before in a World Series. Like, he just doesn't do it. So it's a very, very tough spot to be in if you're going to fade Ohtani. Because there are, I'll tell you, Chelsea, there's a couple of Blue Jays props that I'm really interested in, but they need to take place more likely than not when the Dodgers go to their bullpen, because Ohtani is such a machine right now. He's like minus 400 to win MVP. I mean, he's just, it's a far gone conclusion at this point.
Right. I will say this, like, he has given up runs in the postseason, and there has been stretches where he's kind of struggled at the plate. It's just, you know, it's, we've come to expect the best from Ohtani because he has like these wild outlier games where he hits multiple home runs. Last night he was on base nine times. He was walked five times and he had four hits. So it's very tough for me to say, oh, he's going to go 0-for in this game. Just doesn't feel like it. Meanwhile, the pitching matchup for the Dodgers is going to be Shane Bieber, who's been kind of up and down. He's had some good ones in the postseason. He's had some stinkers in the postseason. So my conclusion is, I think we see some runs in this game. So I would lean towards the over 8. It was kind of my conclusion yesterday. I wish I would have played that, because I do think the Blue Jays can scratch across some runs, even if it's just against the bullpen. And I do think the Dodgers lineup continues to score runs, especially on Shane Bieber, who, you know, has given up some runs this postseason. So I think I'd go over 8 before I'd pick a side.
You know, when you were giving us the line of Shohei Ohtani, I'm going to do some quick math here, because this is an insane thing to say out loud. So he walked five times. For us gamblers, that doesn't count as a base, but in baseball, so he's on base five times. He had two homers, so what that counts as four bases, right? So that's 5 plus 8, that's 13. And his other two hits were two doubles. He nearly had 20 bases. Now, I know it was technically, you know, two games length, but he nearly had 20 bases in a game. How is that even possible?
Yeah, his line, I think, was 1.5. So that is just bananas, what he did last night. All right, best bets come your way next. What we are actually putting our money on comes your way on the Daily Tip after the break. Stick with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time to land the plane. It's the final segment here on the Daily Tip on a Tuesday. I'm Chelsea Messenger, didn't they? And for Jenks. So in a minute, we will have to make our final decisions on what we're actually going to bet on today. So, Den, you said that you are mulling a crazy bet that you want to run past me. So let it fly.
So right now, Ohtani is the far and away favorite to win World Series MVP. Duh, makes sense. He's minus 400. The next closest guy is Vladdy Jr., 10-1. But I'm thinking because of what happened last night. So let's just say Ohtani doesn't have the greatest of performances in the world tonight. Not that he's bad, so to speak, but he's fine, right? He's fine. Maybe he goes five and two thirds, whatever, a couple strikeouts, a couple hits, a couple runs. Because they use so many pitchers, if this series extends to 6 games, or certainly 7 games, I feel like we see Yamamoto again. And he won a complete game in game number 2. So I'm curious, right now he's 30-1 to win MVP. Do you feel like there's an avenue if Ohtani is just like a regular human the rest of the way. For Yamamoto, if he gets another opportunity to pitch and has another crazy performance, maybe it does have to be like super crazy. He has to have another complete game. But I'm just curious if you feel like there's an avenue there. I'm going to put a dollar on it regardless, just to be safe. But that might be something. It's crazy, I know.
But it's at that price. So, like, when you're betting something at, what did you say, 22 to 1?
30 to 1.
30 to 1. Like, that's built into the number. Is that, like, we know it's a long shot, but there is an avenue. Like, that's what the handicap is. Is that, like, we know it's a little crazy, but it's fine. So if you want to put a couple bucks on it, if you have a bonus bet, I'm not going to talk you off of it. Because I do think it is in the realm of possibility. The way that we have seen these two teams battling. And here's the other thing. We have used so many pitchers already. Like, Yamamoto was warming up last night. So, like, yeah. There is a chance that he could come in and close out the winning game of the World Series as well. And you're right. I think Ohtani would have to be very, very lackluster in these next two games. Because, again, he's already had, like, these wild games where it just captures everybody's attention. And plus, he just has the added advantage of, like, he is doing it both ways. And right. That by itself is just such, you know, a trump card for all of these other players. And it does feel like the Dodgers, you know, could win the World Series. I do think if you're looking to put down some other bets, if you think the Blue Jays even have a chance, like, what did you say the number was on Vladdy Jr.?
10 to 1. If you think they have a chance, hammer it. Because that's a much better profit. Although them winning outright is still a pretty decent profit at this, you know, at this point. But that's a much better payout, because you know if they do win, especially with Springer hurt, it's going to be on the bat of Vladdy Jr.
Yeah, and he's been unstoppable this postseason, hitting over 400. So, especially with somebody with power. And it feels to me like MVP has a little bit of a narrative to it. And it feels like he is the guy that got him here. He is the face of the franchise. And, of course, he is a legacy. So it's just one of those things where I think that goes into it as well. But the Blue Jays, of course, would have to win the World Series first in order to secure that bet. All right, Den. So we've talked it out. Hopefully you have something locked in, because I am still mulling my options. But let's get to our best bets of the day.
Time to place your bets.
All right. As I mentioned, it is officially decision-making time. And listen, I feel like there's a lot of good options, but when your actual money is riding on it, it's a little different. So you want to be really sure. So, Den, I'm going to let you go first, since you are guest hosting. Lead us off here. What's your favorite play of the day?
So I'm being a great guest. You say you need some time to mull over. I got you, Chelsea, because I got three bets that I'm hammering away at here. And it starts with the guy that we were just talking about. I'm expecting a big offensive bounce back tonight from Toronto. They didn't score for what was a game and then some in extras. Their last run came in the seventh inning, and they played 18 innings. So I think there's going to be some sort of bounce back. I know Ohtani is on the mound, but I'm trusting in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So I'm taking him over 1.5 bases at plus 105. I was stunned that that number is available to me, but this is why you got to be looking at these numbers really throughout the day. The earlier, you might get a better number. So I really like that number, and I think this is a night where he could do that with one swing of the bat. He's the best player on the Blue Jays. I'm going to put my faith and my trust in the best player in a got-to-have-it game. So I got Vladdy Jr. over 1.5 bases.
I like it. Hottest hitter on the Blue Jays, and eventually the bullpen will have to come in. Probably, I am assuming we're not getting a complete game from Ohtani, who knows? But yeah, it feels like Vladdy Jr. has hit just about everybody this postseason, so I would not put it past him. All right, time for my best bet of the day. I'm going to go with the over 8 between the Blue Jays and the Dodgers. I understand that Ohtani is pitching, but we've seen it this postseason that he can give up runs. I know it feels sacrilegious, but he gave up 3 runs to the Phillies on October 4th, even though he had 9 strikeouts. When we are talking about an over, you just don't need 8 shutout. And I am assuming that Ohtani does not do that against this red-hot Blue Jays lineup, who have gotten hits off some really good pitchers. Other than Yamamoto, who is just pitching on another level right now, they got hits off Blake Snell, and they hit up Tyler Glasnow last night, made him look like an average pitcher. And you've got to remember that this Blue Jays lineup is averaging over 6 runs a game, so I think they can contribute here. And then you look at the Dodgers against Shane Bieber. Shane Bieber's had some good ones, but this Dodgers lineup is absolutely raking. Shohei Ohtani got on base 9 times yesterday, so I think we see some runs scored in this one. And plus, this pitching staff has to be exhausted. They used 19 pitchers, both of these teams combined last night in that 18-inning affair. So let's go over 8 for minus 127 between the Dodgers and the Blue Jays. All right, Dan, looks like you got a couple more bets. What do you like?
Scare money don't make no money. I don't get to do this very often, but I'm going to take full advantage today. I got the Blue Jays on the money line. It's a big number. It's plus 160, but my confidence is going to fall on them to make this a series. One, it helps us. I like more content. We get game 6. It gives us more content, but I do think there's going to be a massive bounce back, and if it's not Vladdy, I do think they have other guys, and we kind of saw this in that series against Seattle. They have other guys that I think can step up when called upon, so I think the Blue Jays, and it kind of plays off of the bet that you just had, Chelsea, with the over. I think you'll see a much better offensive performance from Toronto tonight, so I have them on the money line at plus 160 winning tonight. And then I got to, if I'm the one that gave you the nickname of Hoops Messenger, I got to be Hoops Day over here. So I got a basketball play as well. I didn't take part in any basketball in the Sports Equinox. I'm making up for it today, though. I got the 76ers laying 3.5 against my Washington Wizards. It's a little bit of a happiness hedge, but the Wizards have struggled on defense. They're a young team. Whereas Philadelphia has high expectations, and I know they're not looked at as a championship team at the moment, but they're a much better team right now than Washington is. So I got them. They're coming to Capital One Arena here in D.C., but I got the Philadelphia 76ers laying 3.5 tonight against the Wizards.
Fading the Wizards. You had me there. But I will say this. I've been paying attention, like, tangentially. I don't know if that's a word. Vijay Edgecombe has been pretty good for the Sixers, so maybe very that's good. A storyline to follow. But in general, I am staying away from the NBA, as a lot of us probably are. I will probably stick to player props from here on out, and no, I won't be betting unders with it's some inside information.
Yeah, overs only.
Right? But the NBA is one of those leagues where I'm not great at betting on the NBA, at least until midseason. It just feels like it takes a while for, like, any sport. I want more ammo. I want more stats. And sometimes it's tough just betting on sports at the first of the year.
I have made a lot of money fading the Wizards in the last 2 years. If they're not going to bring me happiness by their play on the floor, they might as well line my pockets. So I'm taking full advantage there. You are correct, though. It feels very worrisome to play a lot of lines now in the NBA. It's just worrisome in general with guys sitting out, rest, load management, all of these things. So maybe that's what Adam Silver is going to help us with, this new initiative or whatever that they're doing to be more clear and transparent and all of these other corporate buzzwords that are riddled in that little statement that they put out. They need to be a little bit more transparent with that. So I'm with you generally. I don't play a lot of lines, but I will fade the Wizards whenever opportunity calls until they give me reasons not to.
Yeah, if you want to feel extra sad, like if you want to like pout and be like, my team sucks and they don't cover the number, the Titans are 4-21 against the number in the last 2 years. 4-21. And like, think about how bad they've been and how many points they've been getting.
It's been double digit spreads. They're not favorites in a lot of those games.
So not only are they bad, they're not even coming close. Like, the odds makers are literally too high on the Titans. The Titans have underachieved in every single category. So again, if you ever want to feel bad or better about yourself, you just come to me and I will feed you some Titan stats.
You know what? You have made me feel better about myself. Here I was thinking I was just, you know, raining on the parade of the Wizards. And in actuality, I'm not nearly as terrible as I thought. Did you see last night this video that's going viral between the Warriors and the Grizzlies about two brothers that played each other? They matched up like late in the game. Both benches were going crazy watching one of them back down the other one and shoot a shot over him. He missed, but it was still a cool moment.
Ah, but I feel like we've seen that before, like Seth and Steph Curry. I think we've seen
right.
this.
Right, but it was two guys that it was two guys that I don't think play a lot, and therefore we got excited because they don't play a lot. the Spencer brothers.
Cam maybe Spencer Adam Silver Pat. Will pimp this story because
we need good PR. Push the Spencer brothers. I don't care if Pat literally only played 1 minute.
Oh my gosh.
He wore 61.
Adam Silver has.
Like, who 61? Wears 61 you know really in basketball?
That
hockey,
guy,
sure.
I suppose.
But Lord have mercy. There wasn't a better option there. 16 wasn't available.
Probably not. That's the thing they do in baseball as well. Like when you see the guys at spring training who are like, they're like the MLB, like the major league invites to big camp, but they're not on the big league team.
Yeah.
They're like number 92. And even like the callers on the, even the announcers on the call are like, I don't know who's on third. There are no last names on that uniform. So the runner at third scores, whatever his name may be. All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Daily Tip. I'm Chelsea Messenger. He's Denton Day. We will see you bright and early tomorrow morning starting at 6 a.m. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.